Accession number 24192, Reel 3.
Mr. Taylor, Reel 3. Now, on an evening, would you ever get out of the barracks during your training period and go get into Norwich?
The first 3 weeks, we weren't allowed out. After that, I don't think we were allowed out during the week. We were allowed out the weekend. Saturday and Sunday were allowed out.
And where would you go when you went out?
Probably down the city, cinema or something. Because you didn't get out till sort of late in the evening. And so you'd go to the cinema, something like that.
Yeah. Would you go to any particular local pubs? Were there any pubs that catered for the army? You know,
I think most of that time, most people catered for the army in those days. There was one at the bottom of the hill, which is still there.
Which one's that?
The Bell. The Bell.
What was that like then?
It was pretty good actually. Yeah, it's a pretty good night.
Better than the canteen.
You've got to be better than that.
Why was it better? I mean, you know.
Well, you had the guys out and get different people. You met different people. People coming back who'd been in the army, that sort of thing, you know. And you met the public, whereas you were glad to get away from your own squad for a night, you know. Perhaps a couple of three of you went out together.
How did you get on with the lads, the other recruits? I mean, were they all? What were the backgrounds like compared to yours? How did you get on?
Probably about the same as me. I think there's probably two or three in the squad, which had about the same background as me.
And did you get on well? Was there no bullying or?
No, never. Can't even remember anything. We did left one guy out one night and put him out in the square, but. And when he woke up in the morning, he was on the square. But other than that, it's only a bit of a laugh. And he was quite happy about it.
So you got on well?
Always. Yeah. Yeah, we used to get on quite well.
Did you have a particular pal? You mentioned Ruby a couple of times. Was he your mate?
He wasn't exactly a mate. He was, we used to talk and do things together as far as the squad's concerned. I'm trying to think, who was he? I don't think I had a really.
You just got on well.
I got on well with everybody, you know. If somebody was going out and they wanted to go out, we wanted to go out together. We all went out together. I just got on with everybody.
Now, what about your instructors? I mean, would you have a corporal or a lance corporal in the room with you?
Yeah, we had a lance corporal. A lance corporal with us. Yes, we had a lance corporal.
And how did he and the rest of the instructors teach you? What did you think of them?
They were wartime soldiers, and the corporal had been in some time. Actually, I think he was pre-war, and he was just about sort of coming to the end of his time. But he was, I liked him. He was a good instructor.
In what way? What was good about? What made him a good one? You know,
his attitude to everybody, his knowledge.
How did he treat you? What was good about his attitude?
He treated you like men. Not sort of raw recruits, and he'd always have a laugh, and because he knew a lot of jokes as well. So I always remember that guy. I can't remember what his name was now, though.
And he knew his stuff.
Oh, he knew his stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he was.
Yeah. Well,
you respected his knowledge.
Oh, I did. In fact, I ended up in some cases teaching the brain gun, taking the squad on the brain gun, because I knew it was the brain gun actually. So. Yes, it did. I got on very well with even the instructors. The RSM's name was Rice.
What was he like?
But the only time we saw him was when we had drill, and he was a small guy. He was probably about 5'4", something like that. Tupney Rice, they used to call him. You know, half a pound of Tupney Rice. But he was quite good. He didn't chase you too much. No, so it was pretty good. I think we probably had it easier than some, because a lot of the guys were just about finishing and come out at the end of the war as well. I think that could be
the PT instructors can be a bit sharp sometimes. What were they like?
PT instructors, they were a little bit. You had to do it. You knew you were there to do it. So probably I was a regular soldier anyway. I was going to do it anyway. So
Were the rest of the squad mainly regulars, or were they mixed in?
It was probably, I suppose it was probably about 30% regulars, I would have said. But that's my particular squad anyway.
Now, what about officers? How did you get on with them? I mean, did you see much of them during this basic training?
No. Didn't put it bluntly, no, I didn't. What I did see of them, I thought they were quite good. I mean, this, I don't know where you saw this programme on the army and on the television, but I mean, that we had nothing like that at all. Nothing like that at all. Nobody throwing the beds up or throwing your lockers out the window and all that sort of thing. None at all.
Well, that's
fairly strict, of course. We had to, with your kit inspections and all that sort of thing.
They treated you fairly.
Yeah.
What about swearing? I mean, did they swear at you, or was the language something you were unexpected? You know?
I can't remember being sworn at, actually. I was a squad, even. You know, I can't. I think I would have remembered. No, I don't remember it at all.
Now, how long were you there for? You'd gone there very late August. You're
right. Oh, there for 6 weeks.
So just into
October.
October.
Yeah.
And how were you assessed? Because you said you came out as best recruit. I mean, how were you?
Well, I can remember we had to do tests on map readings. Of course, you were assessed all the way along the line as well, for your drill, your weapon training, and everything. We were assessed by the instructors, and you were assessed on your map reading by the officers, I think, if I remember rightly. I can't remember else. The shooting, of course. I think that's how they assessed us, and I think it was an overall assessment from throughout the whole of the training. I think that's the way they did it. Well, I can remember of it anyway.
And you did come out well, then?
I did. Yeah. Got presented with a certificate on the square. I'm passing it right. I can't remember what happened to the certificate, though. I think I moved around so much I lost it somewhere. Yeah, it's...
So where were you sent then? What was the next stage then?
We then went on... Well, we have a week's leave. I think we had a week's leave. And from there, after that, we went to Colchester. Miani Barracks in Colchester.
And which battalion were you joining there?
We didn't. We did more training.
So that was a... Was that not... It's not a battalion, it's just a...
No, it was a training set-up. So we did another...
Who was running it? Was it another part?
It was the Anglian Brigade. So you had Northampton, Beds and Hearts, Essex, Norfolk, Suffolk. You could have any instructors from any of the units, actually. In fact, we had a mixture, I think, if I remember rightly. And then that was a sort of advanced training.
What sort of things? I mean, obviously, a lot of it. What sort of things were you picking up there? New things. How did the training progress?
A lot more squad work as an individual, working. You know, taking the squad and that sort of thing, doing your own practices with the squad, teaching.
Had you been selected as a possible NCO, or was that everybody doing it?
Everybody's doing it. I think a lot of it was everything that we'd done initially at Britannia Barracks. Everything was that much more advanced as far as exercise go. You went out as a platoon. On exercises.
Yeah, what would a typical platoon exercise be like? Can you give us an idea of what you'd do?
Depending on what type of exercise they wanted, you'd probably go out and do a defensive position, dig into defensive positions.
So how would you do that? What they taught you to do?
Well, you'd be split up into sections. So you'd have in this case, you'd have a section commander who was one of the soldiers. And you'd be allocated an area, points of aim and all that sort of thing, slit trenches.
How would you lay out slit trenches?
Depending on the position, depending on the amount of people you wanted, because you'd have your Bren gun, your number one and your number two with your Bren gun, set out just to the, probably to the flank, and then your main firepower of rifles in the, probably in two slit trenches in the left of them. And you then sort out, what we used to do was you had a point of aim. So you had a...
What's a point of aim? That's a...
Well, if you're in a slit trench, you have an area which you have to cover. Same with another one you have to get. So the
perimeter's divided up.
Divided up. So you're not firing at somebody else's or helping, using your ammunition on somebody else. So if the enemy came, you were then told to fire, that you'd fire in your particular area. So you were covering that particular area of ground, and everybody else were doing the same over their own particular particular area. That's the way. And then you'd have probably an admin area at the back for you, where you can go back to probably cook or have a brew up in a wood or something. It'd probably be on the edge of a wood or something like that with you, as opposed to being out in the open.
How deep would the slip trenches be, and were they two-man ones or one-man ones?
Normally two men. You always have two men together and want to keep the other one awake. They're normally a normal slip trench without the rivet and all this sort of thing would probably be chest high.
I mean, about
4 foot, yeah. I mean, depending on how tall or how small the guys were, well, they had to sort of dig a little piece at the bottom to stand on, I think. But and you dig your trench, and you dig your sort of parapet at the front, and for your ammunition or something like that, you get ready for the if anything did happen to me.
How long?
Slit trench is usually about 6 foot.
And how wide?
It's used to be 2 foot, I think. 2 foot six, something like that.
Quite cramped then.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you'd actually dig these using what?
You had your entrenching tool, which you carried on your.
Is that still the old one?
The old one. Where you had a handle and a stick and stuck it through the handle, or it depends on how they thought about it, whether you took shovels and picks with you. Whether you use them or not, or use the entrenching tool.
And what other, any other platoon exercise? That's defensive, right? I can understand that. What else, what you do?
Advance of contact.
What was that? How would you do that?
Well, you have a platoon commander would have his three sections normally, with his brain guns. Depending, you know where the enemy is. So you'd... probably put two sections down, and if you want to get around the flank, do right flanking, take the Ben gun first so he could cover you as you're moving around behind him, and then you get around and you would cover him while he moved around to you so it could cut them off, that sort of thing. And by the time you got around to cover everybody, then of course the other people could move as well, the other section could move as well. So that's sort of exercise.
Any other sorts? I mean, advanced contact, defensive positions, anything else?
Defensive exercise.
What about the all-out attack?
Yes.
Covering fire and things like that, you know, for an attack.
Yeah, when you're going forward, you cover one another all the time, going forward, yeah. Yeah, we did those as well, of course. But So that takes in a lot of one or two other people as well, the mortars and that sort of thing. So
what else were you doing at Meany Barracks? You know, other types of training then? You've said a lot about what you were doing. Obviously, everything was a bit more intensive.
It's a bit more intense, yeah. In map reading exercises again, of course, which is more advanced. As opposed to coming back by road, you came back through a cross-country type thing, so you had to read your map.
Had you been taught to drive? I mean, either a Bren carrier or any...
Yeah.
Or a,
yeah. Not at this stage, no. Not at this stage. So you had your map reading, you had your night exercises as well. Sometimes it's just a defence exercise where you went out and dug in overnight and this sort of thing. Patrols, of course, had your night patrols, where you had a point to make for, and there'd be somebody there popping at you or something, as it said you had a...
Were any of the exercises thing. Using either live ammunition or simulated live ammunition? Or
no, we only used blanks. There was no live at that time. There were only blanks.
And any new weapons being introduced to you there?
No.
Or was it just...
No, just the LE Enfield and the normal Bren gun and 2-inch mortar. That's about it.
Anything else about... I don't know how long were you at BNE?
6 weeks.
So until November?
Yeah.
And unless there's anything else that happened there, what happened next?
I can't think of anything else that we would have done there other than the advanced training of what we'd already achieved at Britannia.
So what happened in November? Where were you sent then?
Went on leave. And then I went to Germany and joined a battalion.
Now, whereabouts were they? And this was the 1st Battalion, I presume?
This was the 1st Battalion, yeah.
1st Battalion, Royal Norfolk Regiment,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And where were they?
They were then in the process of moving from... Well, my first job when I got to Germany, before we joined the battalion, because they sort of held us up at the transit camp, because the battalion were moving. So that was at Bielefeld, where we arrived at Bielefeld. We went from Hull to Cuxhaven in Germany by a trip ship.
What was the journey like?
Terrible.
Why?
It was very cold, of course. Sort of December time coming up.
It was December by the time
we went out. And some places there was ice, even. Coming into the harbour, there was ice at Cuxhaven. I think it was an old American Liberty ship, I think, when we went across on, if I can remember rightly. And I think from there, Alder kicks over in about 36 hours, something like that. I was a soldier, not a sailor, so...
You were seasick.
Well, I wasn't, actually. I never was seasick, all the trip we did, but... and then traveled down from Cuxhaven to Bielefeld.
Bielefeld.
And we stayed in a transit camp there for a couple of weeks while the battalion were moving. Then we went and one of the jobs I had was escorting the prisoners from the Bielefeld Nick to what they used to call the 240 up. That was the 240, the rule 240, to Munster, to the hospital. To be able to be treated for their VDs, their venereal diseases, and they contracted before they went into the detention centre. So that was my first job. That was horrendous, that was.
Why was it horrendous?
Well, because you had to stay with them all the time, and you had to go in at what they were doing and what the inoculations and all this sort of thing, and you know, watching it. In fact, we only did it twice, so it was quite lucky, really. And that was a fair journey, too, from Bielefeld to Munster, but there were those days. And then we went down to another battalion.
And they were where?
They'd then moved from Solingen to Neuhaus. Neuhaus. N-E-U-H-A-U-S.
Neuhaus.
There's a castle there they moved into.
What were your first impressions, you know...
Of Germany?
Of the battalion, when you joined them in Germany.
I thought it was very good. Everything was very good.
How did they take you in? You know, there you are, you're new regular, quite important to them in a way, a young regular, rather, you know. Yeah. How did they sort of receive you?
What I can remember is that... we had all the kit anyway, so... we were told they knew who was coming and who was arriving and who what sort of work you'd done and what who you were and what sort of soldier you were, I suppose. And I was allocated to the 3-inch mortar platoon. And the
That's in support company, though.
That's support company, yeah.
How did you feel about that? I mean, you've not done the 3-inch mortar.
I haven't done the 3-inch mortar, no. No, I thought I was interested, actually. I thought it was quite good. And
Did they tell you what they expected of you? You know, I mean, did they sort of lay down the ground rules at all? Either the company sergeant major or the platoon sergeant major, or
no. I think everything was... They were still sort of settling in at the time. I think that was a lot to do with it. And what they were also what was happening was that they were then allocating two platoons, that was the mortar platoon, or support company, rather, and one infantry company, to go from Neuhaus to Senelager, which was the training grounds. And we moved into a camp, just the two platoons, three-inch mortar platoon and a rifle company. We moved from Neuhaus into Senelager camp.
Now, tell me about the training there. That's where you'd presumably learn the 3-inch mortar, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Tell me what there was to learn. I mean, how did you?
Well, you had to... I mean, the 3-inch mortar's got three parts of it. The base plate, the barrel and the bipod. And the sight, of course. You did your normal, what they call tests of elementary training, as they call it, used to call it then. They teach you over a certain time how to set it up, the sighting.
How did you do that? I mean, I know it's complicated now, but I mean,
you've got a you set the mortar up. You've got a compass, and you've got what they call a marker, which is just a stick with a round plate on it. So you stick it in the ground, and that is your marker for where your base plate goes. You then line it up with a compass onto the target. You have it's all set up on the map, where the targets are. You then lay out the mortar with by compass, pointing this direction of the target, and put the base plate down, the barrel.
Did you have to fix the base plate to the ground in any way?
In fact, it's made. It's flat on the top with just the slot or the recess for the barrel to fit in. Underneath, it slopes, really, because the back of the base plate, the spikes are taller, so it's on a slant, so when the mortar is fired, it pushes it in the ground, as opposed to sliding it around. Bipod on, then the sight on. You set the sight.
Now, how did you use the sight? I'm not very familiar with a 3-inch mortar sight. How did it work?
You had a pointer out the front of you.
That's the thing you mentioned.
That's the thing you mentioned, which you take your compass bearing, and somebody is there saying left or right, and stick it in the ground, and that's what you aim at. So you've got a slight, like a telescope sight on the top. You've got two dials on the side, each side, and you've got a bigger dial at the bottom. Two sights work the sight left or right. And your big one at the bottom gives you range.
And they actually moved the barrel as you changed the sight.
Yeah.
So this wasn't so intuitive as the 2-inch. I mean,
No.
This was actually science.
This is big stuff, yeah. Very heavy stuff, yeah. And then you did your tests on that, your T's or your T's on that.
You what?
T's or your T's, test of elementary training. I never forget.
Oh, sorry. How did you actually fire the 3-inch as opposed to the thing?
The bomb itself it weighs 28 pounds.
Were they all the same?
All the same, virtually all. Except we had some which they called deep penetration, which are about that long. And it had a fuse.
That's nearly 2 foot long.
That's about, yeah. So it's sort of half the barrel when you drop it in, and on the end of it was a fuse setting. So you can set it for, because it went in the ground, and you could set it for the time you want, how far you want to go into the ground before it exploded. But the normal.
But they didn't have smoke grenades.
Yeah, yeah, it's phosphorus.
That's another type.
Yeah, that's another type. Yeah, okay. Yeah, another type. This is the explosive I'm talking about at the moment, which weighs 28 pounds. It's got a fuse on the end, had a cap on it. The cap was taken off actually before you start firing, by the number 3. You have three. You have a number 1, number 2, and a number 3 on each mortar. Number 1 takes all the orders and does all the sighting, The number two is the man who loads it. Number three is the monkey, the ammunition monkey's at.
He just fetches the ammunition.
He just brings it past the ammunition.
And would he do the
technique? He caps that off before he gets at number two. And on, in the fin of the mortar is what they call secondaries, like the gunpowder type stuff. And set in the centre is like a 12-bore cartridge. Now, in the bottom of the barrel is a small firing pin. So when you drop the bomb in...
So it's still dropped by hand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's still dropped by hand. It hits the cartridge, or the cartridge strikes the firing pin. It then ignites the secondaries, and that forms the gases which pushes the mortar out. So if you got a misfire, you had no problems, because the thing doesn't go off until it flies in. It gets, if I can remember rightly, I think I think it's 100 feet in the air. And there's a pin inside this which rolls over and allows a ball to roll in. So when it strikes the ground, it'll explode. So if you have a misfire, nothing happened, except that the cartridge is misfired in the mortar itself. And you just tip the barrel up and take it out and blow it up somewhere. Then you had the smoke, which in the fin was exactly the same. The basis of firing it was exactly the same, except it had a timer on the fuse on the base, so it could land on the ground and explode and give you a smoke screen. And the phosphorus was very similar to the HE. And if you looked at it, except it had phosphorus on it, of course. Slightly different. It's got a red, had a red band around it, around the body. And that fired in exactly the same way.
Now, what rate of fire could you achieve with these things? And how accurate were you?
We set a record, but I can't remember what the record was now. But how many you can get in the air at one time. Because I used to like putting them down.
Was that your job? Were you the loader?
No, I was a corporal by then, so I was a...
That was later on, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you learn all three jobs?
Yeah. All three jobs.
When you first got there, what would you be normally, or would you circulate that as well?
Well, normally you change over. I mean, everybody would be being taught the same. But so you take turns of doing number one, number two, number three. That's the way it will work.
And... You got the hang of it fairly quickly from
that. Oh, yeah, I think so.